In this podcast, we'll talk about the power of moments in healthcare, and especially in hospital kind of settings. Let me start by saying that if you're in healthcare, this may be the easiest domain in life to create meaning. So when we talk about creating moments of power, they're meaningful and memorable. And you all, because of the things that you deal with on a day-to-day basis, you assist us with birth, with life, with death, and sickness and in health. And in comparison, my job teaching MBAs or other people selling soda water or plywood or derivatives, they can't compare. So of all fields, you all are in a great position to create moments. But let's get you some extra hints for not getting lost in the many, many opportunities that you have. I want to start with insight because, well, you might think it's a little strange because we typically in the book start with elevation for all our discussions. But insight is relatively key in medicine, I think, because it's so involved with our bodies that our minds need time to catch up. Lewis Thomas wrote a beautiful book called The Youngest Science, where he talked about his life as a physician, and it turns out his dad was also a physician. But Lewis Thomas came to medical school in probably 1930s or 1940s. I haven't gone back to look at the book and doing this podcast. But he talked about his dad, who was trained in an older generation, and astonishingly, physicians of his dad's generation couldn't really treat very much. Antibiotics hadn't been discovered. Modern practices of hospitals and pharmaceuticals hadn't caught on. And so what physicians of his dad's era were able to do is tell people what was going to happen to them. So they'd diagnose, and then they would describe, and that alone was helpful enough. So essentially, for most of history, physicians have played an important role in most societies just by virtue of their knowledge of being able to say, for example, you've got purple fever. What happens in purple fever is you're going to feel really bad for about 2 weeks. Your limbs are going to swell up, and your knees and your ankles are going to turn purple. And what physicians would do is they would describe to families what is going to happen, and then stay by the patient's bedside and try to keep them as comfortable and as hydrated as possible. And that's basically it until antibiotics came along. But what I think that points out is the deep need that all of us have for insight, and in particular insight in situations where our bodies are doing things that we don't understand, where we're feeling awful, and that insight that you can give to the patient and the family is incredibly important. I read a very touching story about a hospice nurse, for example, that said that in their final days, many patients will focus on a particular day or event and seem to be reliving that day over and over again. And for the family, it gets a little worrisome because the patient's stuck. But if she was able to anticipate that for people ahead of time, then when they got there, they would just say, oh, that's the cycling. The end is close. One principle that we describe in the book is that surprise makes positive moments more positive. So that little additional surprise adds as a multiplier, amplifier of positivity. But it's also true that surprise makes negative events more negative. And so for most of history, what physicians were in charge of doing, what the medical community could do for people, is take away the sting of surprise. And that's still a role today, even though we don't privilege as much, because we can actually help people, we can fix their problems. But the notion that what you're trying to do on a day-to-day basis is produce insight, I think would change the way that we do lots of practices. So you go to a hospital and there's activity at the bed and it's very confusing and people are coming in and out and they're doing tests, but they don't always take the time to inform the patient and the patient's family about how those tests fit into an overall course of treatment and diagnosis. You may have just found 3 good positive results in the blood work, but if you don't take the time to unpack those and turn them into moments of insight for the family, you're missing a profound opportunity to produce a moment of insight for the patient and the family. Let's move on and talk a little bit about pride in the framework. I think the opportunities for multiplying milestones are huge in the course of most medical treatments. So there ought to be a celebration the first day that you survive a bout of chemotherapy, and maybe the celebration comes later when you had the first really bad day after your body absorbs the chemotherapy that you use. But just to know after a morning of throwing up, or whatever the side effects of that are, that this is what it's going to be like, but you survived it one day at a time, I think that's worthy of note. And so give people a sticker or a medal or something that they can take with them to say, I am putting points on the board here. I'm not trained in medicine, but, and so you should consult with your physician for everything that I'm about to say. But chemotherapy and radiation are effective because they kill off rapidly dividing cells that characterize a cancer. But as a result, they also produce all the side effects that we see. So the loss of hair, which are also rapidly dividing cells, the loss of the pain in your gums and your stomach upset because cells in your stomach and your lips are, and your gums are rapidly dividing. And so if we combine a moment of insight with a moment of concreteness, could we celebrate milestones? When my hair falls out, that's a sign that something is going right in a lot of ways. I mean, it's a terrible thing for my personal appearance, but it's a sign that the cells in my body that are most rapidly dividing are dying. And that's exactly what I want to happen to the cancer. And so if we can make that mapping a deeper form of insight and also provide some celebration, we could take something that is typically regarded as an awful side effect and celebrate it as progress that we're making towards fighting a disease. That sense of making progress is important for those of you on the healthcare side as well, because my sense is a good picture of burnout is what happens when you're facing an undifferentiated sea of problems and it never seems like you make any progress. So the family therapist works with one family to put it back together, but then the next family shows up in their office. Or the oncology nurse helps one kid with a tumor survive cancer, but the next day the next kid shows up in the same hospital bed. And in that kind of undifferentiated environment of sameness and problems, it helps to have milestones. So imagine that we could celebrate the 50th patient that we've gotten through chemotherapy on the unit so far this year. Or imagine that we went 3 months without having a single patient that showed up at the hospital with the symptoms of a stroke, did not get the treatment that they should have in terms of establishing whether this was a stroke that would respond to the clot-busting drug that enables most people to walk away from a stroke with only minor damage. There's a golden hour in that treatment that if a patient receives a drug within the hour, they very often walk away with only minor problems. What if we managed to make the system work so that golden hour was upheld in all the patients for a 3-month period? I think that would be worthy of a celebration. And in smaller ways, we can celebrate the day-to-day things too that make a big difference. At Kaiser Permanente in Northern California, you walk up to receptionists who are booking appointments in family practice units where I take my kids to go get their school visits. And they'll have a little button that says, "I saved a life." And what that relates to is that they schedule women for mammographies, and occasionally one of their patients that have a mammogram find that there's breast cancer, and that breast cancer can be treated. And so what Kaiser Permanente does, because they have a good electronic medical record system, is they tie that back to the receptionist who booked the appointment for the person after they've gone through therapy. So imagine opening the mail one day and the letter says, "Congratulations, a 53-year-old mom of 3 kids who you worked with and sent encouraged to get a mammogram found out that she had breast cancer, but luckily we caught it in time to treat it and she's doing fine. And here's a pin that we wanted to give you for that service." I think that would be a tremendous source of pride, and it would also make the day-to-day drudgery of scheduling appointments and nagging people about this and have you turned in that test and have you done that panel, those kind of things can get relentless, but not when we're saving lives. Let me say a few words about connection. One of the things that people say who've lived through traumas is that one of the good aspects, so we talk in Appendix 1 of the book about situations where people have experienced growth after traumatic events. And one of the things that people say over and over again is, I really found out who my friends are. I really found out how warm and supportive my family is. So a renewed sense of connection to the people around us is one of the things that's possible in the midst of even traumatic situations, even really awful healthcare situations. And the question I have is, are there things that you can do as a medical person to foster those conversations even more? I mean, taking the time to pause and ask the married couple, you know, "What's your reaction to this? How are you two dealing with this? What's going to change?" Asking your patient, "What's going to change about your life after this illness?" Asking people consciously, "What have you learned about your family from going through this?" I think those are great questions that will foster people to think about the connections in their life. And what we know from research is that thinking about those connections is a spot of joy in an otherwise awful situation. Let me finish by talking about elevation. Situations of elevation are intensely intensely emotional, intensely sensory experiences. And it turns out a lot of the things that people say in the post-traumatic growth literature that they have learned and benefited from in the course of an illness is they say that the little things matter more. I'm more able to enjoy a sunset now. I'm more able to enjoy a beautiful flower. And I think the Sharp healthcare example in one of the latter chapters is a great source of the kind of insight that happened in that organization where they released thousands of employees to think systematically about how do we make the lives of our patients nicer, better in particular ways. And so, for example, they started creating spa water. You know, I actually don't like this stuff, but, you know, putting the cucumbers and the mint in the water to add a little flavor to it, or the citrus fruit. And so people started creating spa water tanks and making them available to patients. One nurse started, and this caught on throughout the hospital, a towel service. Like you're sitting in first class flight in an airplane and you get the hot towel right before dinner. Well, they would do this right before bedtime and scent the towels with lavender. And both the visitors of the patients and the patients themselves were thrilled to have that intense sensory experience of the warm cloth and the wonderful lavender right before bedtime. I think those are the kind of opportunities for those small moments of elevation that would really transform the experience of lots of patients. And in terms of creating moments of elevation, I want to remind you of the phrase, the soul-sucking force of reasonableness. Because I think there are times when we could err on the side of producing pleasure or comfort for a patient, and we default to doing the normal nutrition thing that we normally do. So I loved a story from a woman who talked about being in a hospital as a kid. Doctors were worried about her, that she was running fever that they couldn't explain, and she was on a diet with no solids, which meant that every morning a bowl of cream of wheat showed up on a tray. And she hated cream of wheat. And so the second morning in the hospital, her dad comes into the room looking a little suspicious, and he opens up his coat and pulls out a large chocolate milkshake. He says, "I'll trade you." And every morning, she's in the hospital, it goes on like that. He eats her cream of wheat, and she sips the chocolate milkshake. And years later, she can't remember a lot about being in the hospital or the many tests that were conducted there. But she remembers her dad pulling out that milkshake from under his coat with a smile every morning. I think it's appropriate that we ended a book on moments with a moment in healthcare. I love the story that Dan surfaced of the snow with the hospital-bound girl at the end of the book. You all, in your work in healthcare, play such an important role in our lives. And the two nurses who smuggled in the snow for the little girl, I know they knew that she was grateful and her mom was grateful, but I want to tell you a story about somebody that probably wasn't thanked, because we don't know who the person is, but who played a critical role for one of my friends. My best friend from high school, his wife in her 20s survived brain cancer. And she was told at the time that she might not survive, but she survived. She was told that she might not walk again, but she walked. Told that she might not ever have a child, but she had two. And she's raised those, one through college and one is on to graduate school and one's in sophomore year of college. But unfortunately, recently, the cancer, 25 years, brain cancer came back. And the family was pulling out all the stops. She was undergoing radiation every day. Hair was coming out in clumps. She lost the ability to walk. And the steroids gave her a huge appetite that they were using to take care of some of the damage. But every day, in the midst of 2 or 3 weeks of radiation treatment, they would do the treatment, then stop by the lunch counter in the hospital, and she would order the same sandwich that was packaged up from the hospital commissary. And it was a turkey and avocado sandwich. And the family gently suggested, her kids and spouse gently suggested, there might be more interesting places to eat occasionally than the commissary. But what the one thing that tasted best to her in life was the turkey with a very, very heavy-handed, generous application of avocado. Now, she's currently undergoing her second round of radiation treatment, so the rest of her story is not written at this point. But there's some prep cook in a hospital in Houston, Texas, that I would like to say thanks to as a friend of the family. You may not have known, as you did your heavy-handed application of avocado to those turkey sandwiches, that you were going to be providing a moment of elevation for a mom with brain cancer. That avocado was pure pleasure for a person going through an awful experience, and she was grateful for it. And to all of you in healthcare, the impact you have on our lives is tremendous. So I'd encourage you to think about the moments you can create for us, because we need you, and we'll be very grateful.